Apratarakyat. Beyond the power of reasoning. Anirdeshat. Beyond the power of thinking. Iti. Thus. Keshu. Someone. Api. Also. Nishchaya. Definitely concluded. Atra. Herein. Anurupam. Which of them is right? Rajarishe. O sage amongst the kings. Vivrimsha. Judge yourself. Swa. By your own. Manishaya. Power of intelligence. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage amongst kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Translation responsibly. There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage amongst kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Purport. The Vaishnavites, the devotees of the Lord, do believe, as above explained, that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. He is the Supreme Director, for He confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15 that He, as all-pervading Paramatma, stays in everyone's heart and keeps vigilance over all actions and witnesses all activities. The argument of the atheist that no one can be punished for one's misdeeds unless proved before a qualified justice is refuted herein. For we accept the perpetual witness and constant companion of the living being. A living being may forget all that he might have done in his past or present life, but one must know that in the same tree of the material body, the individual soul and the supreme soul as Paramatma are sitting like two birds. One of them, the living being, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, whereas the supreme being is there to witness the activities. Therefore, the Paramatma feature, the supreme soul, is actually the witness of all activities of the living being. And only by his direction can the living being remember or forget what he might have done in the past. He is therefore both the all-pervading impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma in everyone's heart. He is the knower of all past, present and future, and nothing can be concealed from him. The devotees know this truth, and therefore they discharge their duties sincerely, without being overly anxious for rewards. Besides that, one cannot estimate the Lord's reactions, either by speculation or by scholarship. Why does he put some into difficulty and not others? He is the supreme knower of the Vedic knowledge, and thus he is the factual Vedantist. At the same time, he is the compiler of the Vedanta. No one is independent of him, and everyone is engaged in his service in different ways. In the conditioned state, such services are rendered by the living being under force of the material nature, whereas in the liberated state, the living being is helped by the spiritual nature in the voluntary, loving service of the Lord. There is no incongruity or inebriety in his actions. All are on the path of the absolute truth. Bhishma Dev correctly estimated the inconceivable actions of the Lord. The conclusion is, therefore, that the sufferings of the representative of religion and the representative of the earth, as present before Maharaj Parikshit, were planned to prove that Maharaj Parikshit was the ideal executive head because he knew well how to give protection to the cows, the earth, and the brahmanas, religious principles, the two pillars of spiritual advancement. Everyone is under the full control of the Lord. He is quite correct in his action when he desires something to be done by someone, irrespective of the consideration of the particular case. Maharaj Parikshit was thus put to test for his greatness. Now let us see how he solves it by his sagacious mind. Omagyan timarandasya dinanjana shalakaya chakshurum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam pancha kalpata rubyascha kripa sindhu bhavacha patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare A very nice purport, and there's many, many points which Prabhupada makes within the purport. So Srila Prabhupada, he said that if I have one criticism of my disciples, it is they do not read my books enough, like that. Hands up if you read Prabhupada's books for 2 hours every day. Okay, no more. Okay, any questions or comments? Hands up if you read Prabhupada's books for 1 hour every day. Very, very good. Very good. Hands up if you read for half an hour every day. Very good. Hands up if you read 15 minutes or 10 minutes every day. Very good. Very good. In Kali Yuga, that's very good. You can read one shloka every day, that's very good in Kali Yuga. So Srila Prabhupada said that we should read his books for 1 to 2 hours every day. That was his instruction. 1 to 2 hours every day. So in 1977, Prabhupada was leaving his body. He was very ill. His body was emaciated. And my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, he was personally looking after Srila Prabhupada with a number of other devotees. And he said it was very intense at that time. He was only sleeping 5-6 hours every night and chanting his rounds. And the rest of the time he was with Prabhupada and taking his meals, you know, taking bath. But the rest of the time he was with Prabhupada. You know, it was very intense and very absorbing. It wasn't a lot of spare time. So Prabhupada was there. And he was mainly... At the very end, he was mainly lying on his bed most of the time, and they were taking him into the see the deities. But even at the end, then that was too difficult for Prabhupada to move. So one time he turned to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he said, "Are you reading my books?" And Tamal Krishna Maharaj just looked at Prabhupada in disbelief. He said, "Prabhupada, I don't have any time to read your books." Said, "I'm just with you. You know, I'm sleeping 5-6 hours. I'm with you. I'm fully engaged. I just eat my meals and then I come back." And then, and Prabhupada said, "You must reduce eating and sleeping." This was Prabhupada. "You must reduce eating and sleeping." And Tamal Krishna Maharaj just looked at Prabhupada and he was just stunned. You know, what could he say? And Prabhupada said it requires practice. Because Srila Prabhupada himself, he was only sleeping 2 hours a day, practically speaking. Three to five, if you add up his total rest time, it was like 3 hours a day total rest time. You know, he would rest after breakfast and he'd rest after lunch. Right, and then he'd at night time, hour and a half, 2 hours, and then have his massage. So if you add up his actual like rest time, it was 3 to 4 hours a day. Like that. That was his rest. Like that. The rest of the time was just, you know, it was not stopping. So Prabhupada said, it requires practice. So we take it, even though Prabhupada's a Paramahamsa's liberated soul, we take it that he worked at it throughout his life. His Grihastha ashram, and then his Sannyasa ashram, he worked. Right? He pushed himself to reduce the sleeping, reduce the eating. And he actually said at the end, because at the end he practically wasn't eating. Practically. And he said, my whole life I've not been engaged in, he said, I've renounced sex life and defending, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. He said, I've already renounced sex life and defending. And he said, I've been praying to Krishna to renounce eating and sleeping, and now at last I can renounce it. At the end, he was practically not. At the end, he was practically not eating. They were just making one. It was like a nutritional kind of drink, like a protein powder kind of drink. They were making that for him, and he was taking that. Bhakti Churuswami was cooking khichdi. Prabhupada was taking the juice of the khichdi. Last few months, that's practically what he was saying. Practically not eating. Practically. So this was Prabhupada. He was just pushing. I've told this story before. One time Prabhupada is in his room, I think it's in Vrindavan, and yeah, it must be like 2 o'clock in the morning or something, and he's translating on his dictaphone. So he rings his bell. So the servant, I think it was Satsarup Maharaj at the time, you know, he wakes up, because in the middle of the night, Prabhupada sometimes ring the bell in the middle of the night, and the servants would be sleeping just outside in the next room, so they'd have to hear the bell. Hari Sori Prabhu said one time, I think the dictaphone wasn't working, so Prabhupada rang the bell, and Hari Sori just woke up, heard the bell, ran in. Prabhupada said, it is not working. So then he came and he kind of fixed it and then went out, he laid down, he was just kind of going to sleep and the bell rang again. So he got up and ran in. Prabhupada said, still it is not working. So it happened about 5 times. He just went back, just go to sleep, and then Prabhupada rang the bell. And then the 6th time, he got up, he heard the bell, and he ran in, and Prabhupada's just looking at him. Because he didn't actually ring the bell. He just thought he heard the bell. So he just got up and he ran in, Prabhupada's just looking at him. What are you doing? So he rang the bell. It must have been like 2 in the morning. And I think Satsarup Maharaj came in. And Prabhupada said, where is Guru Kripa Swami? And they said, and Satsarup Maharaj said, he's taking rest, Srila Prabhupada. He said, why is he taking rest? He said, go and bring him here. So he went to find him, knocked on the door, woke him up, said, Prabhupada wants to see you now. So okay, so he got up and walked in Prabhupada's room. So Prabhupada was translating his purports on the dictaphone. So Guru Kripa Swami Prabhu, he walks in, offers his obeisance, and he's sitting there on the other side of the desk, and he's just sitting there, just looking at Prabhupada. So Prabhupada just kept translating. And then after a few minutes, he stopped and he looked at him. He said, what were you doing? And he said, I was sleeping, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, why were you sleeping? And he said, well, Prabhupada slept 5 or 6 hours a night. Back in the old days of ISKCON, everyone slept 5 or 6 hours. Everyone sleeps more these days, but in Prabhupada's time, everyone slept like 5 or 6 hours. So he said, Prabhupada, he said, I'm sleeping. He said, why are you sleeping? He said, Prabhupada sleeps 5 or 6 hours a night. Prabhupada said, why are you not sleeping 2 hours a night? And he said, Prabhupada, I can't sleep like that. He said, you can do that, but I cannot do that. He said, why you cannot do it? And Guru Kripa Swami was just looking for him. He looked at Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, but you're a Paramahamsa. Prabhupada said, why you are not a Paramahamsa? He just looked at Prabhupada and just thought, Prabhupada said, go and take rest. So this was Prabhupada. Just pushing. Right. Prabhupada said it is a pushing movement. Prabhupada said, I was pushed by my Guru Maharaj and now I'm pushing you. This is the movement. This is the disciplic succession. This is parampara. We are being pushed at that. That is called Bhajana Kriya. Now, what is the third stage of spiritual advancement? First is Shraddha. Second is Sadhu Sangha. Right? And third is Bhajana Kriya. Kriya means force. Right? Force, like if something hits something else, it gets moved. So a car hits another car, it gets moved. So that's Kriya. Kriya means force. So that is the Bhajana Kriya. Right? Shraddha. Shraddha means faith. How do you get faith? Where does faith come from?
Association.
Yeah, association. What sort of association? What's that?
Those who have faith.
Yeah, those who have faith. With the spiritual energy. That's how we get Shraddha, faith. Right? This is described by Haridas Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani. He says this is called... Sorry, my brain has stopped. What's it called? Agyata Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti. So Agyata Sukriti means unknown devotional activity or unknown devotional service. So for many lifetimes, this is not our first lifetime of bhakti or devotional service. Why are we sitting here dressed in saris or dhotis and kurtas with tilak on? Why the other 4 million people in Melbourne aren't sitting here with saris and dhotis and kurtas with tilak on? Why are we doing it? Because we did devotional service already. This is not the first time. You know, you don't think you've just come into this life and you're doing some devotional service. They've regressed some devotees in ISKCON back to the previous life, right? And they were devotees previously. There's one famous example came out recently. One disciple of Srila Prabhupada in Scotland died in a car accident in 1973 and then took birth as a Mataji in an Indian family in London. Now she's a devotee, like now, at this point in time. And they somehow worked out her previous life, and she was one of Prabhupada's disciples in the previous life who died in a car accident. Right? And then took birth as a, you know, devotee to continue in devotional service. Like that. So this is not the first time that we're coming into devotional service. We must have done it before. So how did we, what have we done before? It is called Agyata Sukriti. It means unknown devotional activity. It means somehow in the past we've done devotional service. Even we may not know what we're doing. Agyata means unknown. I don't know that I'm doing it, but I'm doing devotional service. So what are examples of unknown devotional service? Agyata Sukriti.
Taking prasadam.
Okay. So you look at Crossways today. Right? Just as an example. So you go to Crossways today. How many people? 400 people every day? 500 people every day? Like coming in, right? Most of them have got no idea that this is Krishna Prasad. Right? They don't understand. It is spiritual energy. It is spiritualized foodstuff. It is not material. They don't understand that. That's called agyata, unknown. But it's devotional service. They are honoring the remnants of the Lord's Prasada. So it's unknown devotional service. That's creating, by contact with that spiritual energy, that is creating purification in the consciousness. Prabhupada says, when you take prasad, right, your brain becomes purified. Right? So then after a couple of years, they come in. Some people, they take prasad practically every day. You know, I've seen at Gopal's and Crossways, some people come nearly every day. Even one friend of my family, he's like, I've known him since I was born practically. Very old friend of my family. And he's addicted to Gopal's. Like he's addicted. Yeah, he lives in Nanawadi, which is like must take close to an hour to get to the city. But he'll drive to the city just to go to Gopal's, just to have a bikora. Yeah, he's like addicted to prasadam. But interesting, he's an atheist. He's an atheist. He doesn't even believe in God. You know, sometimes we have prasadam together. Like I meet him and we have prasad, and I say to him, "I said, do you believe in God?" He says, But he's addicted to prasada. He's addicted to the spiritual energy. So it is purifying his consciousness. And he's very favorable towards the movement. He came to my wedding. Very favorable towards the movement. And sometimes I say to him, I say, how did you like my wedding? He said, that was the best wedding I've ever been to. He said, compared to Western weddings, you know, you dress up in white, you know, and you walk up with a flower and everyone's singing hymns and, you know, it's like... He said, there's no life in it. But our wedding, everyone's dressed very colourfully, right? There's flowers everywhere, there's fruits everywhere, beautiful jagya pit, right? Very nice kirtan. You know, after I got married, we all did big kirtan around the jagya pit. It's all family and friends that are all going around, you know, swept up in the kirtan. So this is the akyata sukriti, or contact with the spiritual energy of Krishna, the internal, the Daivi Prakriti. So by contacting this Daivi Prakriti, people become purified. So that is called Agyata Sukriti. So when Haridas Thakur says, when you do that for heaps and heaps of lifetimes, right, then you take to devotional service. When you become purified, when you develop credit, like that. Just don't put your feet out in front of the deities, like that. If you feel you've got to stretch, just stand up. Like that, because in front of the deities you shouldn't put your feet. So it is said that by heaps and heaps and heaps of this agyata sukriti, then you will develop shraddha. Shraddha means faith. Just like the people, they come every day, they take prasadam at Crossways or Gopal, and after some time they think, well, what's in these books anyway? So then they start picking up the table. You see them, they have the books on the table at Crossways? Are they on the table? Yeah. So they pick up the books and then they start going through it. And because the brain is becoming purified, Prabhupada says, then they may understand something. Oh, wait a minute, I'm not the body. So what am I doing with my life? You know, what is all this? What's it all about? Like that. And then suddenly, oh, something starts clicking, right, in the brain. Like that. So that's why Srila Prabhupada said we have a three-pronged attack to the material energy. The material energy attacks us with three prongs, right? She is attacking us with a trident. Durga Devi, she holds a trident. So she's attacking all of us, right? Prabhupada said, when you join this kind, you declare war on Maya. We're in a war. This is a fight, right? So what does she fight us with, right? Sattva Gun, Raja Gun, Tama Gun. Adi Baltic, Adi Devik, Adi Atmik. Past, present, future, right? She is constantly attacking us. So we fight back. We don't fight back. We just stand behind Prabhupada. And say, Prabhupada, you fight. We'll just stand behind you. Boom. We should just be soldiers in the battle. We just should. One thing that we should not do is leave the battle. That's all. Just don't leave the battle. Because the battle will go on for many years yet. And the real battle's yet to come, actually. The real battle. Prabhupada actually said, the Krishna consciousness movement will go down in history as saving humanity in its darkest hour. So it's actually, the real battle hasn't even come yet. It may not come in our lifetime, so maybe it will. Maybe it's coming tomorrow. We don't know, but it's coming. The battle is coming. But there's a battle going on. So how do we fight back? Right? Prasadam distribution, book distribution, and Harinam Sankirtan. Prabhupada said this is the three-pronged attack of ISKCON. Why? Because when you take those three into the material energy, it purifies the consciousness of the conditioned souls. They get Prabhupada's books, they hear the holy name, they take Krishna's prasadam, and they become purified. Another friend of mine, she's a beauty technician, a nail technician. She was second in Victoria in the competition for painting people's nails. Right? She's like a beauty technician. She's actually retired now. She looks after horses now, but she was. She made a lot of money from doing that, like that. So she made the ladies' nails like that. So she used to come and meet me, her and her husband. They come and take prasadam with me at Gopal's. And then in the background, this is very important. We have to understand these important points. That's why at one point in time at Gopal's, a few years ago, they took the books off the table. Right, and I directly said to the devotee who did that, who I love and respect very much, is a very dear friend of mine, but I said, this is wrong. You've taken the books off the table. He said, oh, anyway. So now the new devotee is there, Suman Prabhu is there. So I said, please put the books back on the table. The books should always be on the table. And the mantra should always be playing in the background. Right? Because it brainwashes people. Because the reporter said to Prabhupada, is your movement brainwashing? And Prabhupada said, yes. Because your brain is dirty. You need it. Probably, yes, we are brainwashing. Your brain is dirty. So I used to meet her. We used to have prasadam. And the mantra was going on in the background, right, during the meal. And then she said, then during the week, you know, she was doing the nails on the ladies. And while she's doing the nails, she's going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And then the ladies would say, what are you saying? And she said, oh, sorry. She said, oh, I'm chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. My friend is a Hare Krishna devotee, and we go to the restaurant, and they play the mantra, and it gets into my mind, like that. So this is a Gyata Sukriti. And I gave her a picture of Krishna. You know, there's an old picture. I don't know. You don't see it around so much. You know the one where he's laying on the tree, and he's playing the flute? Yeah. Very beautiful one. Who did that one? It's in Crossways, isn't it? Yeah, very beautiful picture. You know, he's laying back on the tree and he's playing the flute. It's all kind of wavy and everything. So I gave her that picture, so she had it there, right above where she did the nails. And she said, dozens of people would say, oh, what's that? And she'd say, oh, that's Krishna. And then she'd... Agyato Sukriti. Right? If you're on the bodily concept of life, then we will ruin your life. Right? If you're coming with... You're doing your nails, right, and we will purify you somehow. This is our movement. Somehow we have to infiltrate. Somehow we have to give them Krishna at all costs. Like that. Just like at the farm, we have a woofer program, wheeling workers on organic farms. Like, so we always have people come and stay with us. Cielo was one of our woofers. Now she's a brainwasher. Sorry. Sorry for ruining your life. Another one was Miriam. Right? She's also a devotee now. Like that. Many of them have become very favorable. You know, many of them became vegetarian. And many of them. So one couple, they came. Their names, they were from Spain. They came 1 year ago. What's the name? My brain's not working properly. I can't think of the names. So they came, and then, you know, we have program every Thursday night at the farm, Saturday, Sunday morning we have Bhagavatam class. So we say to the woofers, you're welcome to join us. So usually they come and join us. So then they came, for 3 or 4 weeks, and then they came all the time to do the kirtan. They like the chanting and take prasad with us. They take prasad every day, and then hearing some philosophy. So she was leaving, and then I was driving them to the train station, and she said, you know, Keshava, I have to ask you a question. And I said, what is that? And she said, you know, this Hare Krishna mantra, it won't stop going in my mind. It won't stop. I can't stop it. It just keeps going in my mind. And she said to me, she said, is this a good thing? I said, yeah, this is a good thing. I said, this is good, because this will purify you. Purify your consciousness. So this is our attack on the material energy, right? Our only mission in life, whether you're grihastha or brahmachari or sannyasi or vanaprastha, whatever you are, then your only mission in life, actually speaking, is to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, to give people prasadam, to give them the holy name, and to give them Prabhupada's books. That's actually our only purpose, regardless of which ashram we're in. The danger of the grihastha ashram is that you become covered by maya. The material energy covers you. One time Prabhupada was in France and he was walking with some disciples, and he said to the devotees, he said, Prabhupada, stop. And he said, why are the grihasthas in maya? And everyone did, you know, and Prabhupada would, on a morning walk, and then Prabhupada would just stop. And he'd just ask a question, and everyone would just like look at Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "Why are all the grihasthas in Maya?" And everyone just looked at him. You know, there's grihasthas there, and you know. So they just looked at him. No one said anything. And Prabhupada said, "That is all right. That is," he said, "that is their position." So grihasthas are in Maya. It is true. We're in the bodily concept of life. But the brahmacharis are in Maya also. They're also in the bodily concept of life. We're all in Maya. Just like one time Prabhupada was walking in Los Angeles on the beach, and Giriraj Maharaj was walking with Prabhupada, and then he said at one point, he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhupada, I got in Maya." And Prabhupada put his cane into the sand and he said, "You are always in Maya." And he just walked off. Right? And then Giriraj Maharaj just offered his obeisances, like on the beach, just offered his obeisances to Prabhupada, and then he just ran to catch up to Prabhupada. Practically everyone's in Maya in this world. The only person who's not was Prabhupada himself. And the rest of us are somewhere in between the two energies, the material energy and the spirit. We're detached, we're somewhere in between. We're coming out now, becoming purified, but still we're in Maya. So to get rid of this Maya, we purify ourselves by preaching in Krishna consciousness. This is the most powerful way. Prabhupada said, if you want to get recognized by Krishna, you have to preach. He said, this will make you recognized. One time, one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, how do we repay you? How do I repay my debt to you?" And Prabhupada said, "Actually, it is not possible." But he said, "If you want to try, then preach vigorously like me." So that's our hope. We preach like Prabhupada. We follow what he did. Right, sleep 2 hours a day. Right, translate books for 6 hours, and then run a society, worldwide society. We can't do what he did, but at least let's try to repay him. Let's distribute some books. Not even some, let's distribute a lot of books. Let's distribute lots of prasadam. Let's chant the holy name all over the world. So that people cannot go anywhere. Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya's loving network is covering the earth. It's a network. You can't escape it. Wherever you go, the Hare Krishnas are there. And then you go there, the Hare Krishnas are there. And then you go there, the Hare Krishnas are there. Everywhere. Sometimes they said to Prabhupada, the reporters would say, "Is your movement spreading?" Prabhupada said, "Like wildfire." He said, "Just spreading like wildfire." This is because of the preaching of the devotees. Prabhupada was so enthusiastic to increase it like that. So this is called Shraddha. Shraddha means we get faith. Faith in Krishna. Where does faith come from? From Agyata Sukriti. Right, so now we've got faith. This is the best thing to do with my life. Right? So then once you have faith, what do you do? Second stage is you get the association of the devotees. And then what do the devotees do to you? Vajana Kriya. Kriya means like that. Okay. Prabhu. Whenever you hear someone say Prabhu, you know that you're in trouble. Prabhu, can you please do some service? It's not safe to come to the temple because you will be engaged by the Vaishnavas in service to Krishna, especially in this temple. This temple's a little bit intense. Have you noticed? Hands up if you think it's a little bit intense. A little bit? So there is an option. There are options. There are other temples. I've been to other temples. They're not intense like this one. Some are, but a lot of them are nowhere near as intense as this one. But if you want to get purified, Prabhupada said, you have to jump into the fire. That's why I stay around this temple. Because it's more intense. The fire is bigger and it's burning more brightly. And you have to jump into it. And when you jump into it, you get purified more rapidly. The intensity, it's much more intense. It burns your false ego much quicker, and that hurts a lot more, having your ego burnt so rapidly. But it is good for you, if you can handle it. It is good. It has to be a balance. It means there has to be a balance. Right? If you know that it is too much, then you have to pull back a little bit. In devotional service, you have to learn that. Young devotees, it takes some time to work these out, things out, how to balance it. You have to make sure you get enough sleep. You join the ashram, you're sleeping 5 or 6 hours a night, and after a month or two, you crash because of... it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that sleep is a function of the intelligence. I know myself, I sleep about 7 hours a day. If I sleep less, if I sleep 6 hours a day for about 3 days, 4 days, then my intelligence just starts shutting down. I become dysfunctional. Like that. So I've learned over years I have to rest enough so I can do my service. You know, so that when I give class, I can actually make some coherent sense. You know, when I don't sleep enough, sometimes I give class, I don't even know what I'm saying. Yeah, and everyone's just looking at me like, what are you talking about? Yeah, it doesn't even make sense like that. So you have to make sure you keep yourself in a healthy state of mind. Prabhupada actually said, he said, strong body, strong mind, strong intelligence, so you can serve Krishna. Right? Everything has to be strong. You have to keep yourself strong. Right? Make sure you sleep enough. Make sure you eat the right prasadam. Right? Not too much. Krishna says, not too little. He says both those things in the Bhagavad Gita. Too much sleep, not enough sleep. Too much work, not enough work. Too much recreation, not enough recreation. All these things have to be balanced. Where do devotees get recreation? Right? Prabhupada said in the kirtan. This is our recreation. So you should all be there in the kirtan. Now look, there's so many devotees here for class. Where were you all for the kirtan? Should come for the kirtan as much as possible. Make the appropriate adjustments. Sometimes you have service, that's okay, but not all the time. Kirtans are becoming a bit thin, I think. Devotees should be there. This is your recreation. Do we have a nice kirtan today? Mucha Kunda Prabhu? We had a nice kirtan. It was just 3 or 4 of us, men dancing, the Madhijis were dancing, and I mean, it was only 3 or 4, but we had a nice kirtan like that. I was just thinking, where is everyone else? Yeah. Would it be nice if there was 20 or 30 or 40 or 150 or 2,500 or 6,000? Like that. You ever been in a kirtan where there's 2,000 devotees? Now you go to Mayapur, 2,000 devotees. Or if you go to Ukraine, they have those festivals out there, 7,000 devotees. Big kirtan. Or you go to Polish Woodstock. Indrajuna Swami gets on the main stage with Sri Prahlad, Village of Peace, right? 100,000 people chanting Hare Krishna mantra at one time. Right? See Sri Prahlad, have you seen the videos? Sri Prahlad Prabhu is up there, Hare Krishna. You've got 100,000 people chanting simultaneously. Biggest kirtan since Lord Chaitanya left the planet. Massive kirtan like that. So the Hare Krishna movement is good. We've come to the right place. Prabhupada said, this movement is like drinking hot sugarcane juice. Right? It is so sweet you can't stop, but it's burning your lips. Right? So this is what this movement is like. It is intense, but you can't stop. Prabhupada has captured all of us, and now we just have to surrender. Hold on for the ride. When I joined this temple, I thought I was going to be peaceful. I joined over 20 years ago. I thought I was actually going to be peaceful. That's actually why I came here, to be peaceful. I haven't been peaceful since I joined. Last time I was peaceful was before I was a devotee. It's intense. I joined, and first thing they sent me to Crossways, first 2 months. That wasn't peaceful. Yeah, and then they sent me out on book distribution. I did that for a number of years, Sankirtan. That was my only service for a number of years, Sankirtan. So, I haven't been peaceful for years. So one time I said to my guru, he said to me, we were talking about something. He said, why do you want this? Because there's something he didn't want to. I was asking something he didn't want to do like that. So he said, why do you want this? And I said, because I want to be peaceful. He said, do you think Arjuna was peaceful on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? That was it. That was the end of the conversation. He wasn't going to permit it. We have to be peaceful. We are peaceful. We feel peaceful. I feel happy. I feel peaceful. Like that. But my life's not peaceful. So much to do. So much to do all the time. It's overwhelming sometimes. But we just do it as humble servants for Krishna. And keep ourselves balanced, strong in body and mind, so that we can do our service and try to spread this Sankirtan movement. Okay. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we have discussed. You have to make the appropriate adjustments in your life. Do you live on the ground floor or do you live on like the upper floor?
First floor.
First floor. Okay. So go to your window, right? Open the window, get the computer, drop it. Right? That's a good adjustment to make in your life. Right? Then you'll have more time to read. Just trying to give you practical advice. Hey, you have to make practical adjustments. You have to make practical adjustments like that. The best way, because devotees often say, "Oh, you know, Prabhupada gave the instruction that we should read an hour or two a day, and the guru gives that instruction," but many of us struggle to do that. So the way that you can fit all these things in your life, you have to develop a regulation. Devotional life has to be regulated. Sadhana bhakti actually means regulation. Viti means rules, regulation. So what you do, you eat, you chant at the same time every day. You eat at the same time every day, the same amount every day, right? You sleep at the same time every day, right? And you read at the same time. So this is my reading time. So if you get yourself a schedule, right, a regulated schedule, and you fit into that schedule, then that's how you can accomplish these things. So you have to make the necessary adjustments. You know, like checking your email on the internet. You know. So like, you know, the computer's there, okay, this is my time. After breakfast I quickly look at the emails. You know, when I'm at the farm, then in the morning, like usually I have breakfast, like get up in the morning, chant my rounds, right, and then I do exercise, right, and then I worship Guru Raj, worship my deity, right, and then I take some prasad, and then after my sadhana is finished, right, and my regular activity, then, okay, now I'll turn the computer on, just check if there's any emails, and then I'll start doing my service and whatever I have to do. So you get regulated. Right? Otherwise, you're supposed to be chanting your japa, and then, you know, you're checking the emails, and then you're supposed to be reading Prabhupada's books, and you know, looking at the emails. Like, but sometimes you see the devotees chanting their japa in the temple, right, reading the notice board. You know, like, Hare Krishna. That's not japa. That's not japa. You might as well just put your beads down because it's not japa. Right? Japa is actually jnana. Sixth chapter of Gita is called jnana yoga. Jnana means meditation. Japa is actually meditation. When you're chanting japa, you're not supposed to be doing anything else. Right? It's only japa. Right? You see devotees walking around, stopping and talking, doing this, doing that. You know, when you chant your rounds, right, you don't do anything else. Right? You come to a sacred place, an undistracted place like the temple room. Well, you're very fortunate. You can chant here in front of the deities. How fortunate are you? There's Krishna. Hare Krishna. There's Hare Krishna. There's Radha Krishna. You're so fortunate. You got the opportunity. Here or Prabhupada's room, we're so fortunate. There's not many temples in the room where they have Prabhupada's personal artifacts in his room like that. So we have a very, a very nice opportunity like that. So when you chant japa, it has to be in an undistracted environment. See devotees chanting in the courtyard. They're not even listening to the mantra. Devotees are in the courtyard, they're just watching everything that's going on. Your mind is out of control. I see some devotees chanting, their mind's just out of control. Because Sanatana Goswami says in Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are six principles when chanting the holy name, when chanting japa. One of them is mental control. If the mind's not controlled, you're not chanting. The mind's all over the place. So. Is that okay? Any other question?
What are the other elements?
The other five? Do you remember the six? They're not fresh in my mind. One is to contemplate the meaning of the mantra.
Where's the
book? It's Mahanidhi Swami has a japa book. It's in one of the Gayatri books as well. If you look in the books of the Gayatri, it's in there. It's in the Hari Bhakti Vilas itself. Where else is it mentioned? I've seen it in a few other places. Yeah, so it's in a few places like that. But very, yeah, it's, I think Sachin Andan Swami might have it in his Japa book and Gayatri book. And I think it's in Mahanidhi Swami's Gayatri book as well. So. Any other questions, comments?
Our object is to get love, prema, prema, prema. So why another remedy is so important next week?
Because if you don't remove the anattas, then you can't love Krishna. So you have to remove your anattas. Anatta nivritti is the longest stage. It takes, practically we're going through anatta nivritti our whole life, practically. So you have to minimize the anattas. Because, I can't hold these two things at the same time. Well, I can. But I can't, there's a limit. So I can't hold Krishna in my consciousness or in my mind or in my heart when there's so many other things. So you have to put all the other... That's anatta. Nivritti. Nivritti means like that, rejecting. So I have to put all these other things down, remove them. And then ultimately, you have to get rid of lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, these negative qualities, then you can focus on Krishna in your consciousness. So you have to remove this otherwise then. Any other questions?
I just on the last line of this translation, it seems like just for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. So sometimes, we hear exactly what we need to do, but somehow or the other, our intelligence is just almost non-existent or sleeping. So you're either sitting in an ashram or when you have to or whatever, but you're still repetitive in your negligence of, becomes or bhakti or sanda bhakti. So how do we actually, for ourselves and for others, how do we come out of that kind of limbo state of just being complacent and not sharpening intelligence?
What was the last thing you said? Sharpening intelligence.
How do you come out of,
but what was the very last thing you said?
Limbo state?
Yeah, and then you said
sharpening intelligence.
How to sharpen intelligence. Like that. Yeah. So the same question is asked by Arjuna in the third chapter of the Gita. So he says, why is it that I act, even though it's contrary to my good, for my benefit, even though I know I should not be doing something, but it's like it's swept away. Karma esha, krodha esha, rajagunu samudbhava. It's born from the mode of passion. If you look at the material energy, in sum total, the material energy is basically rajagun. Right? It's the mode of passion. Right? So that gives rise to lust. Lust means independence from God. Right? I should be serving God, but no, I'll act independently. Anything we do which is independent of Krishna, that is calm, that is lust, misuse of independence. So then Krishna, he answers Arjuna, so what do you do? So he said you should sharpen the intelligence. Right? And how does the intelligence become strong? Because the intelligence, if you compare it to a muscle, just like if I want my body to be strong, I have to exercise, right? I do exercise, my body becomes strong, right? So then how does the intelligence become strong? Right? By Shastra. That's why we have to read Prabhupada's books. And you see devotees who regularly read Prabhupada's books, and regularly attending to classes in the Bhagavatam and so forth, then they have less problems with their mind because the intelligence is strong. So when the mind goes off, right, the intelligence can just grab it and say, okay, you know, you might want to do this, but we're going to do this. We're going to serve Krishna. So you have to keep philosophically fixed up. Right. So intelligence is strong. And then in that section, if you look at that final third, final section of the third chapter of the Gita, if you look at the commentary by Baladeva, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Baladeva Vijayabhushan, then they say when you're dealing with the mind, right, because the mind is an enemy, right, then you have to deal with it with the danda. The danda means the rod or the stick of chastisement. So it says that when you're dealing with the mind, you have to beat it, you have to just hit it. That's the only way to deal with it. So when your mind starts going off, you just have to hit it very hard, like that. Because if you give the mind, you know, my guru used to give the example. He said he was on a train in India, and, you know, like five people on the seats, and it's very tight. So one skinny old man, he came up, and he was like, you know, Maharaj, my guru Maharaj was sannyasi. So he's, you know, came up and said, you know, just please give me a little bit. So, you know, he moved a little bit, and the man sat down. But then, you know, his big wife came in, his kids came in, and then, you know, by the end of the journey, he was off the seat. You know, he'd lost his seat, and the whole family had just taken up. So because he gave that much, then everything was taken. So he told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was laughing. He said, yes, this is like Maya, right? In like a needle, out like a plow. He said, you give Maya this much, and she'll take everything like that. So you can't compromise with Maya. Can't compromise with the material energy. So you have to keep your intelligence strong. That's what it's saying here. What does Krishna say when he finishes Bhagavad Gita? He says to Arjuna, now you've heard everything, now you decide what to do. I've said everything now. Bhagavad Gita has spoken. Now it's your decision. What will you do with this knowledge? Will you serve me? Or will you use your independence? Does that help? Anything else? Any other points?
How do we get practically, how do we get rid of all the disunity and the like a practicing duty how
to Narottam Das Thakur says you have to use them in Krishna's service. So if you're greedy, be greedy for Krishna. Be greedy to get the mercy. Right? If you're proud, be proud of your spiritual master, or be proud of ISKCON, like that. If you're angry, right, use that anger to remove obstacles to spread this movement. So each of those, like Narottam Das Thakur says, they can be used in Krishna's service also. If you read in Pratana, if you read Narottam Das Thakur's teachings and songs, then he teaches us how to. Any other questions? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.